cold or hot. Like, hot, we don't do lukewarm.
Yeah, I think, well, the science that I was explaining was like, you know, your body is like a temperature, like a given temperature.
Yeah.
And then you have to essentially, you know, bring it down into what is comfortable for your body. So Chinese medicine believes that you need to just drink like lukewarm or warm, and that your body will function better and you'll have more like, I don't know, like what the like fluidity, I guess, yeah, in the sense of what it is. But I think in general, like from a just a American diet perspective, like other countries tend to just eat and drink drastically different than us, and they have a lot less chemicals in their food.
They're a lot less fat.
And I think that's like, if you actually look just from a underlying perspective of like autoimmune diseases, you'll see a ton of countries that have like a much lower standard of living, but they have a lot less autoimmune problems than us. And like, we're at an epidemic because of all the chemicals and stuff in our food.
This country is in deep shit, my friend.
Well, I think it's not just the U.S., but I think
when I think of like this country and its alliances.
yeah. I think underlying though, if you just see like the, like what we're eating is like, it, the way that lobbies work and like these companies like Monsanto that have so much power, you know, and we're just like eating these things. And even if you buy organic, it's like draining into the water, in our water systems. And if you actually look at like, you know, cancer in the 1970s and, you know, autism and stuff, we're at like 100x of where it used to be 1 in 5,000 kids. Now it's like 1 in 92. And there's just a ton of different science on it. So we ultimately got into the subject, and I've been studying really deeply into it.
I found it interesting just because, like, what, you know, like I have a newborn. Newborns don't drink hot, they drink body temperature milk. And like, if you put it in the fridge to keep it, you don't heat it. You just warm it up to like try to get basically back to that. And if you have pets, they tell you like, don't give them cold water after the dog park. Like, don't give them boiling water, obviously.
Yeah.
There's a reason that why am I treating like very, very new, you know, animals different than we treat our, it doesn't make sense logically. And then, you know, similar to yourself, like I'm a big fan of Eastern philosophy. And like, I just think if you look, they look healthier, like it looks better. And it doesn't seem to me to be all that confusing, which is not to say that I don't pick McDonald's up all the time like an idiot. Like I can't help it.
And I like a cold water or like cold drink stuff, but I get it. It's like, I think it's like an underlying, like, you know, the diet in itself, you know, we eat a lot of meat, and there's a lot of like, countries that you've seen that have like started to also adapt eating like red meat. And I red meat occasionally, but you see actually their prostate cancer rates have gone up significantly in Japan and China and these countries that suddenly started like not eating a ton of red meat.
I just figured that was the Kobe beef.
Yeah. I mean, the Kobe is, I was just in Japan. It was very nice. but it was, I think that there's a lot of things kind of going on. I've been putting a lot more emphasis on it, but I think a lot more people are awakening to that. And I think it's actually what you see in like the success of like Beyond Meat's like IPO and whatnot. Yeah. Is because you know, the newer generations are, you know, waking up to, you know, hey, like I'm not going to put in crap into my body, and I'm going to like, you know, understand like what is coming in, because it's going to have a direct impact on my life.
Well, Monsanto's probably not going to sponsor this podcast anymore, but
yeah, sorry to
no, it's perfectly fine. We've shit on plenty of people. no, but this has absolutely nothing to do with current media, but we'll get there.
Yeah,
I feel like a lot of me too, but like previous generations would look at like fad diets and random things, and I'll do like a fad, you know, cleanse to try to like get back, and not to get in shape, but to like get myself in a position where I feel like I can then attack trying to get back in shape, which I clearly have not done. But maybe looking at this as like, why don't we try to change our diet not in the form of a fad, but literally like, why don't we just try to pick food that should be like actually healthy. Like that's the purpose, not I want this chocolate sundae.
Yeah.
I want to pursue feeling good.
Yeah.
And if you can rewire your brain away from like I crave chocolate sundae to I crave to feel good, it's easier to eat that food. Like we did the Shy Wellness Challenge with Pete from Hyde Park Angels and like all these CEOs, and I got away from it because I had a kid born. I was eating hospital food for a week, and then I just completely fell off the rails. But but like, during that couple week or 6 week period, I slept better. I never felt better. And I didn't really make any drastic changes. I just sort of rewired my brain, which I think is kind of we'll take this as a segue into actual business, because I think like the entrepreneurial sort of business owner, it's not really about being an entrepreneur as much as it's about being like a person who has a lot to do and a very little amount of time to do it in, has to covet feeling good and having energy and all these things. And I think that's why you see a lot of founders and guys like yourself who do pursue learning about these things, because it's like anything that will give me that extra edge.
I think it's whatever will give you an extra edge, and also minimize stress, because I think I've had, like, actually the reason I
Pritzker
got so
just helped
into,
us with that though, didn't he? To minimize stress.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he just
next
had a
year
big,
will be very stress free.
Yeah, we were just having a conversation on that actually before the show. But in any case, like the underlying issues, like, you know, I had like some autoimmune issues like when I was in my early 20s. I just randomly developed, and you know what doctors do is just give you pills and stuff. But I remember like trying to run my business and have health problems was like a huge problem. And then changed my diet, did a ton of research, took an entrepreneurial approach to the health, and have been like, you know, great ever since. And I think that that's kind of like an underlying testament to a lot of entrepreneurs I see, is like they'll take an entrepreneurial approach to their health and try to be just the most effective, efficient, and, you know, allow them to live like the best life they can, so that they can take all their energy and focus it to, like, you know, whatever their goal is with their business, because it's already a ton of stress. To add like health stress on top of that is, you know, it's really tough. It makes it even, you know, almost impossible.
Yeah, it's insult to injury. I think it's funny, like, I don't want to say this and have people like make fun of it, but there's, in my mind, to elite, you know, CEOs and people who are business professionals, I think there's a lot of commonality between them and professional athletes. Mm-hmm. Like, they have to maximize their brain and body in order to make this work. They got to travel all over the place. They have to like skip conditions. You're tired. Mm-hmm. Everyone goes home to take a nap. We don't get that choice. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a different world. So I think it's probably not a surprise that we're starting to see a lot of folks like us, like, getting, at least pursuing it. So all good. Anything like that that gets more good in the world is a good thing.
100%.
Speaking of good in the world and sort of big differences and changes, current media, I want to learn kind of what current media is first, then we'll learn a little bit more about you and how you got to this point. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, we're sitting here at WGN Radio, which is staring at the Tribune building that we used to be in. Mm-hmm. And I had a conversation with this yesterday with somebody about the changes in media and how the media industry as a whole has not seen more wealth created than ever before in its history. And yet the companies and organizations and people that created the media landscape are not there to see it. They're all out of business or going out of business quickly because they just haven't been able to adapt and come on to like how people consume and just accept the fact that they don't have a start and stop time and like random shit that's useless put in it so they can drop an ad. Like you can make money in this business without having to drop ads, even though we're going to drop an ad in yours. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's what have you seen that in the media space that made you be like, oh, I think we can create something that's completely different?
Yeah. So, you know, I think the underlying idea behind Current was, we wanted to think about how could we maximize things and maximize earning and also provide value to the users while also creating value for ourselves. And it's funny that like we are in a very traditional, you know, media environment here, but I think
which is still nice.
Which is nice. But it's actually like if you even take a step, maybe front or back, I'm not actually sure, into like, you know, media businesses today, like Facebook and the social media companies. I think that even they are actually in about to see a tremendous amount of change in what their business will be as we go into, you know, the 2020 and the years beyond.
A lot of Facebook stuff already to me feels not all that much less antiquated than when somebody sends me a digital magazine.
And the underlying thing is like, you know, I think users are waking up to the fact that if a product is free, it means that you are the product, right? That's the only way that works. We knew that and like thought about it. And the whole idea behind Current was, okay, can we create a better model that incentivizes the user to do something they're already doing each day? So we're specifically focusing music today. That was a daily habit that we were like, okay, independent of what country you're from, what language you speak, people listen to music. And so we chose that space to start in. And we were like, okay, this is something that people are going to do quite often. And can we monetize in a different way than, you know, traditional music platforms, which has been a very terrible business? You know, usually like music platforms like generally lose money. It's a winner take all business. But people are spending so much attention on these services. So we were like, okay, well, if we can take like micro actions, micro tasks, things that we can monetize and then allow people to earn money while they listen and then do these other activities, whether it's like, you know, fill out a short questionnaire or, you know, engage with an offer or input their credit card information to get extra cash back to our merchant partners. And we could pay them like a couple hundred extra bucks a year. That provides users with something that they're going to pay for anyways, or that they're already doing anyways, yeah. Which is listening to music, but also provides them value. And it also provides our, you know, partners value and provides our platform values. And I think that you're going to see that.
They're literally getting paid. So like in the model, it's really... I don't know if it's as much of a shift as then there's a bigger part of this with the token sale, but like,
yeah.
I don't know if it's much of as a shift away from how or why money's transacted as much as it is in the model that everyone knows on Facebook. You are the product.
Yeah.
In this particular case, everybody except for you got something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you got to scroll on Facebook to see some pictures of stupid kids, but like in the end of the day, like they took your money and sold it for a shitload of money.
Right.
In this particular one, I'm actually going to we're going to get your data. We're going to get your info. Yeah. But I'm actually going to give you money. Like, I'm going to give you money.
And if you don't want to exchange, like, if you
don't have to.
You don't have to. And if you don't want to interact with some of the earning functionalities, you can delete them or not engage with them.
Yeah.
And if users actually want to delete their profile on our service, like, it's right in our settings screen. It says, like, request to delete my account. And then we delete all your information. It's really about the transparency aspect. And I think some people care more about that. But I think that, you know, Facebook... just, you know, to touch on that, like, I think they're seeing that happening. Like, there's a lot of rumors around, like, you know, Libra, like the cryptocurrency they're creating is, you know, they're talking about, okay, it's going to be this payment, you know, transfer tool and all this stuff. But I actually really think that, you know, some of the rumors that have been coming out with it is that, you know, they're going to create this and that's what they're going to share their revenue with their users with. Yeah. Because in order for their model to continue and these people to continue, you know, and then be able to pull this information, they're going to have to compensate the users in some way. I have another theory around it where it's like, okay, well, Facebook's a publicly traded company. They have like, you know, investors that they have to kind of report to, and they have certain earnings and their margins are a certain thing. Libra is actually an independent organization. So if they compensate, like they're going to make money off of Libra, but if they're compensating people in Libra, you know, maybe there's enough margin there, you know, and it's a different type of business unit. So I think that they're like foreseeing this and foreshadowing. But I think a lot of businesses like this type of business model, like there's really two today that are prominent, right? Subscription based and ad based, and this is like, you know, kind of a hybrid, like an incentive based earning business model. And you know, we, you know, started in this industry about a year and a half ago and have been through a ton of different like kind of changes and trying to kind of like figure out how to make this work, because most people are like, well, how can you be in a business that already loses a ton of money and still be able to make enough money to pay people like what you say you're going to and still like survive, you know? And you know, we've been able to figure out a lot of those pieces, but you know, we're excited to see this shift, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's been, you know, like internet 2.0, I think it's been like 3.0, you know.
Yeah, well, so we're gonna go into you completed a $36 million token sale in 18.
Mm.
We're gonna go into how that factors into the question you posed to yourself just now, which was, how are we going to provide this platform all the services and provide people with money for doing it, which we'll get into that. But first, I want to, we're gonna grab hands and jump off this cliff together.
Okay.
Because the Libra conversation you just talked about, like, I'm totally in with you on this.
Yeah.
I actually think that we've talked about this before with the gig economy, reputation economy, and things like that. We are vastly approaching a place where the average Joe is going to have some sort of stipend, some sort of financial something to support.
Mm-hmm.
Because there won't be... the jobs that exist aren't going to be there. Now there's going to be people going to tech schools and different things to, like, you know, colleges are basically fucked, but like, that's okay with me. They're going to have to pursue different things. Mm-hmm. Okay. But how are we going to solve this gigantic problem of where's the money going to come from?
Mm.
And the reality of it is, and in my opinion, there's going to be some government that's going to have to push in this, but I think you're 100% right that, and I don't know if they're planning on this as part of it or if it's just sort of a symptom or whatever, but the Libra concept of people getting a little bit of money for the information that they're providing, I think is going to become totally ubiquitous.
Mm.
We already have an investment in a company called Dumbstruck, which literally offers you to pay you to give you access to their your camera for you to watch a couple videos, and then they can analyze your facial expressions and things. Mm-hmm. And that's its own thing. But that's going to end up, stuff like that's going to be dropped into everything you consume, even walking down the street.
Right, right, right.
And you'll be chipped or whatever, that like just like settings on your phone will say, like, I'm totally down for this.
Yeah.
And you're just going to walk down the street, and the people that are down for it are going to get it, and there'll be some cheating. But for the most part, it'll work. It enables you to make maybe $100 a month, maybe $200 a month on your data, just chilling. Mm-hmm. And then maybe $100 a month driving, and maybe $100 a month doing this. And, that, and it's enough that if the right chips fall,
it's pretty significant.
It's gigantic.
Like right now, you know,
it solves a global crisis, I think, actually.
Massive. And I think that, you know, our goal right now has just been, how do we, you know, get people 100, 200 extra bucks a year, or the average person, like, without doing a tremendous amount of work? But, you know, the way that we see it, as we grow, it's like we definitely think it could be in the thousands of dollars, especially because very few companies have been able to, like, if you just think about, like, going back to music as an example, it's like everyone was like, okay, like, how am I going to monetize? Oh, audio ads, because a lot of things happen in the background, right? It's hard to monetize background listening. And if you actually look at Spotify's earnings and Pandora, it's like they lose a tremendous amount of money. They make money from their top 10 to 15% users that actually pay for the service, but the majority of people don't. And no one has had these innovative, like, thoughts of, like, hey, people spend a lot of time here. Are there other aspects of their lives that we can improve? Like, what about their finances? What about, you know, their, you know, the market research questions that you were talking about? Like, what if we ask them to, we partner with a brand and then, like, you know, direct them this way? And that's exactly what we focused on, which was like, you know, we think that we can create a tremendous amount of value just by better monetizing people's daily habits and then embedding ourselves into other aspects of their lives. If you actually think about in China, we were talking about, like, you know, Eastern medicines, like, it doesn't even, not even in China, but it's like, if you look at, in China, Japan, Korea, they all have their one, like, messaging platform. So in China, it's WeChat, Line in Japan, Kakao in Korea. And if you actually use those platforms and, like, you know, they work differently here versus, like, how people use them there. But if you just go on YouTube and put, like, you know, people using WeChat, it's literally embedded into every aspect of their lives. Yeah. Then when they shop, they pay with WePay. When they read their news, they do it there. When they send money, when they, like, put, it's like every aspect of their lives. So they don't have to monetize certain aspects of that business because it's embedded in all aspects. And I think that in the US, we're very like, oh, this is a music platform. This is a social media platform. This is a video platform. This is whatever platform. I think that, you know, there's opportunity to be able to kind of cross over those boundaries into, like, one place that, you know, you're initially going in there for something, but then you're using the attention there to kind of direct it into another activity that's totally opt-in.
Completely random, but I actually think there might be something to this is you look at, like, Western cultures and, like, our education system, as well as the way that we consume media in the, like, earliest, like, even earlier than this, but, like, 1800s, 1900s, everything was categorized. Front page, back page, business page, sports page. Everything that we did in school was geometry, history, English. Like, it was broken up, separate people, separate things, separate teachers. And if you go to a lot of the Eastern culture, most of it's what we would call here in America homeroom. Very, very common, education-wise, was like, in fact, in Ireland, still, some people can go to college for free. Some people don't even get to go to college. And it's not because they have a choice or don't have a choice. It's just you got opted out, like, really early on. It happens in China all the time. Like, you're in homeroom. Everything is the same for everybody. Certain people end up stepping ahead in certain areas and, like, oh, you're the math, you're whatever. And then they start to push those people into the right tracks and they end up going into the universities that are specifically built for that. And in this, and if you also, if you look at, like, old news articles and things, or you download any of the apps that come out of China, everything looks like just a collage. They don't have it broken down like Bloomberg had. Like, we in America, we're, like, mentally scripted to categorize and compartmentalize. And it makes us very siloed. Our businesses are siloed. Our people are siloed. Our neighborhoods are siloed. And I think that that can't be ignored when you look at, like, the future of, like, America was the leading power for the last, you know, several hundred years. But as we pivot towards a digital economy, a digital world, the walls and the barriers go down, right? So now you're looking at China and Japan and India in particular, and what's going to end up happening in Africa and all these places. Like, they're all working together on the same platforms universally, and we're the one still over here doing inches and ounces. Like, if we don't change on that, we're like backing ourselves into a corner. That's just my feeling.
No, I think that inherently, you know, the model is naturally changing, right? You kind of see it happening in the platforms that we use today, and I think that in order for like,
well, I think they're pursuing that. Like you look at Facebook, yeah. I think a lot of them. Shareholders are like, what the fuck? Like, where's the money?
Right.
And so they're chasing after other.
They have to because like, there's, you can't squeeze like, you know, more ads, right? Like, or without ruining the entire experience, right? So they have to kind of like, okay, what other things can we do? You know? And, but then that's kind of leading them to the same place, you know? I mean, it just took different, like, it was a different approach, I guess, in each one. Yeah. You know,
so. Either way, I think ultimately, while, sometimes tech stuff kind of scares the shit out of me because I think like the move fast, break stuff thing, which I'm a big believer in, also comes with like, yeah, I know I say all the time, you know, like always it's easier to apologize and ask for permission, but what if they don't accept the apology?
Well, you know, being in doing a cryptocurrency raise, I can very well relate to that.
And so yeah, let's get into like how that went down and just the whole nine. Like tell me how that went and how that contributes to your business model and things. Like, I guess what fascinates me about you and the company is not that you have a novel approach to media and that, like, yes, they're scalable, there's different things you can do. What I think is more interesting to me is the same thing with the guy that we had on before you, Seed CX. Edward's building a company that has, while it has its core product, it has so many other facets that I would call global today.
Yeah.
You have a bunch of stuff that you're working on that are globally scalable from day one, whereas most companies have to start with this tiny little egg and like multiply it until they finally are in a position where they can add the Dash Inc. to their company and start going global.
Yeah.
You're sort of like global today. Talk to me about how that works out.
Yeah. So, definitely a different approach. It has its drawbacks as well, which I'll kind of go into some of those areas. But you know, it's been enlightening, I suppose. The
understatement of the century.
Yeah. I mean, just going back to kind of the idea was right. Okay. Like, you know, this whole concept of like cryptocurrency is something that I had personally been invested in, into like, you know, Bitcoin and other, you know, cryptocurrencies, you know, after leaving college. Right. But it was kind of like a hobby thing. It wasn't something that, I ever thought that I would start some sort of like, you know, endeavor in the crypto space. And then, you know, a couple years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, we kind of stumbled upon this idea of like, you know, rewarding people for attention and data and whatnot. And then we were like, well, we can kind of take one of these two paths. We can either go and raise traditional venture capital and go down that whole, you know, process that we've actually had been through before raising. We had raised equity rounds before, like seed rounds. Or we could, you know, like do this as a cryptocurrency release and reward people in that, as, you know, their reward for listening on our service. We ultimately chose the latter. It was very difficult to get everyone on board at our company to do it because there weren't that many rules around it. But we were kind of seeing what was happening in the space, and like everyone was excited about it. It really, unlike ever before, it wasn't just like a niche thing. Like there was tons of people. That's when you started seeing it on the news, and you started seeing like Bitcoins at like, you know, like it was maybe at 5K at the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's when we were like kind of about to, we were doing our raise.
Yeah, so I would guess that's about right. Yeah.
Yeah. So then, so this is like end of 2017. We had then done the token sale. We had started down the whole process of doing it, and we didn't really know what to expect, to be honest with you, because it was such a crazy space, and we, you know, had been all over the world doing different road shows and doing conferences, and like you'd be in like South America, and then like 3 days later you'd be in Macau, and your body didn't even know like where you were. And I just remember like being in this like kind of like mentality, I was like, man, this is like so insane. And you just kind of saw how every country treated crypto differently, but there was a lot of excitement. You know, a large percentage of our backers ended up being international. Like, you know, I think 70-80% of our investor base is not from the U.S. of the money that we raised. When we completed it, we were like, wow, I can't, like, within 1 month, we had raised this, like, you know, massive quantity of money. And it wasn't like anything that, you know, you'd ever seen, because the idea like really caught on.
Meanwhile, and then, angels in Chicago raised $500,000 for you.
Yeah, so it was this crazy thing, because when we were in the in the token sale process. It was media had caught on around it, and then, like, you know, all these different groups had found out about it on the internet, and you know, Telegram is where a lot of people would kind of gather and talk about crypto, which is an app, like a messaging app. And so, like, now it's like changed a little bit, but back then that was like the place. And we hit like the max capacity of a Telegram account, which was 100,000 people simultaneously chatting in this this thing. And then we had to close it because we had too much interest in the sale. And once that happened, because we were already kind of like trying to, we had to cancel our public sale because of some of the regulatory, because simultaneously while this is all happening, which is all great, like you're like, wow, like people like love what we're doing. Yeah. You have this other thing, like the SEC announces God knows what about like this one thing, and like maybe this, all these things are illegal, and we're like, okay,
call the
lawyer. And I was like, well, we're only going to do a private sale, and I guess we have to cancel the public side of things because, like, we don't even know if legally we can do it. And so you're kind of in this like middle ground, and then that one, you know, as an entrepreneur, I've done several different businesses my whole life, and that's definitely always been my approach of like, you know, like, you know, we're still a startup, and like we can, this isn't that big a deal, and we'll just,
you can,
like,
lean over
yeah,
the line,
yeah, yeah, and you know, and you know, whatever. But then, like, you know,
that's,
we started
a big number,
right? But then we started talking to lawyers, and you know, and it was actually even hard to find lawyers that knew what was going on, yeah. Right? So then we're reaching out to like the best attorneys that we can find from the Valley and stuff, and there was, you know, that not that many of them, and you know, then we, you know, what, but it actually worked in our favor, I guess, like when we decided to close the sale, because then. Even then FOMO kicked in where people were like, oh, like, you know, let me in, whatever. So we ultimately had like, you know, nine figures in interest for a smaller sale. And, you know, this is just like, it was just like nothing I'd ever seen before, you know? Then after the sale, we were like, okay, you know, let's figure out what we, like, let's make sure that we like tie everything together and we make sure that we're like, we're in a good legal standing, right? Yeah. Go to the lawyers. Lawyers kind of like see like everything that's gone on, and you know, the space is simultaneously changing. The SEC saying, okay, like these things are going to be treated as securities. We're trying to figure out like, okay, how do we best classify into this, you know, the Reg D offering in the U.S. and right, and ultimately it came down to the fact that we had to basically do like a repurchase slash like a rescission on the entire offering, and then we went through this whole process for like 4 months with our lawyers to clean everything up, and then we had to offer everyone a refund, and they had an opportunity to essentially, you know. Take that refund or, you know, stay in the deal. And we had a small percentage of people that took it, and then we filed with the SEC. Upon doing that, the SEC became aware of Around, and then we went through a whole process with them as well, right? And then so now... So
the legal fees are about $35 million on the 36.
Not quite that high, but...
That's high, like, I bet it's a lot.
It's like, yeah, it's a lot. It was like, you know, several hundred thousands of dollars. Yeah. It was this whole, like, process, right? And ultimately, it was something that at that point, once we started kind of like, you know, back and forth with the SEC around this stuff, we were very thankful that we actually had followed the procedures. Yeah. Because very few companies in the United States have, yeah. Right? We're in a very unique, like, I would say our company is one of like...
You are in good standing.
Is one of like, I don't even know how many, like, but I would say it's less than a dozen. I don't know. And it's, and it was this whole process that was very costly, but it was actually kind of a blessing in disguise because, we actually had to change our underlying model during that whole process. Initially the idea was let's reward people in crypto, like our crypto, for their activities that they do, yep. In our product. The problem with that, right, and that I think is a problem actually with a lot of cryptocurrencies today is and platforms is that's a very inflationary behavior. And if you think about inflationary behaviors, you get Venezuela, you get, yep. Zimbabwe, and you get ultimately a lot of value destruction.
You get removed as CEO.
Yeah, it was like something that when we were going through this whole process, we're like, well, even if we wanted to, we couldn't issue the coin yeah. out as essentially like a compensation, yep. Because it was going to be classified as security. And in order for, if that's going to be the case, then you have a 1-year hold, which is called a rule 144. And so the whole model kind of broke down, and then we were like, okay, well let's reward people in points, and these points will have a dollar value. And then, the way that a kind of our underlying model works now is that as people consume points on or consume content on currents or do these activities, they don't actually see the whole crypto side of it because most people aren't necessarily ready for that yet. Yep. They understand it exists, but crypto is still pretty confusing for the average user. And so as they earn and then redeem for, you know, gift cards or products or cash or whatever, we take a portion of every redemption and then buy our crypto off of the market. Yep. So we're actually always reducing supply, yep. right? And so you can essentially then have a sustainable platform that rewards people, but then you have the underlying model of the coin where that value creation is created, right? Because you're essentially taking fiat and buying it off of the market, right? It's kind of like a stock buyback. Yep. And so it was a blessing in disguise that it happened, but the amount of what's unique about doing a cryptocurrency raise that, you know, is like something that's mind-boggling to me, and I like feel for all the crypto founders that exist or people that even like want to get in the space, is that the things that we had to do was essentially what a lot of companies that are about to go public do.
Yep.
But the difference between companies that are about to go public is that one, they have a ton
market cap.
Yeah. But they also
full of CFOs,
a team of people. Like, yeah. Doesn't even have to be
their
CFOs.
Job is to take IPO.
Just a team would be good. Not even have to be CFOs. Like, it's literally, we had at the time, like, you know, 10, 12 people, and you're dealing with like the SEC, you're dealing with the CFTC, you have to create different bank accounts because, and then we have company in Gibraltar that has then a transfer price agreement with the company in the US, and it's like, and in this entire interim you're also trying to figure out how to create product market fit, which already is difficult. Like, you're already bound to, like, 97% of startups, 99 whatever it is, fail. So you have to do all of that, plus all of this regulatory stuff, plus maintain sentiment for the underlying investors, because people are kind of trying to figure, especially if international ones, are like, why are they taking so long to launch this coin? Like, what about the token? And then figure out then an economic model that allows your business to thrive, the users to prevail, and the underlying investors in the coin to also have value creation. And you have to do all of those at the same time. It's very difficult, right, to do and do successfully. And I think that's why underlyingly a lot of crypto companies aren't doing as well as they used to. Is it possible? Sure. But it's a very difficult thing. And crypto is a very fast-paced industry. And people that are in crypto are very fast-paced people. And they're trading, like, the way they think about it is like, you know, it's not like traditional VC where it's like, you know, I'm good on my 5 to 7 year horizon. Like, you're just constantly moving. So you have to, like, make moves fast if you want to preserve sentiment and people, like, you know, still, believing in what you're building. So it's a very, like, it's crazy. But, like, honestly, the last year of my life, like, I turned 30 in December, and like, it was like that, this, like, 2018 for me was a year where I felt that I like gained like 10 years of wisdom compared to like the previous nine, where I just felt like I excel or became a different type of entrepreneur. Yeah. And really understood things in a different way.
I think you're very fortunate. I mean, I think most people learn at a much slower pace, and they usually are learned not necessarily like maybe the tiger's chasing their tail, but like, it's not live or die.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the few that have been very successful long term, like historically, like $1 billion success, are the ones that like dropped into the fire. And that fire can't be something as mundane as like, we had to deal with a, you know, money crunch. Like, okay, you know, we all do that. It has to be something like literally revolutionizing a business. We're on the cutting edge of it and we're doing it, but Jesus, we don't know what we're doing. And the people who are like judging us, they really don't know what the hell they're doing either. Mm-hmm. So like, the back and forth between you and the SEC is sort of like, you go back and read a book, and then your lawyer reads a book, and then you guys say something, and then they go, yeah, we'll come right back. And then they go read the same book you just read, and they come back at you and give their interpretation. Like, it's all just like writing that's taking place right in front of you. And you're a part of the code of law that will govern everything.
That was like the hardest
part. That's crazy.
It was the hardest part was, I remember like when we were in the middle of it, and you know, we were just like, well, we just need to follow securities laws. Let's just do that. Right? And I was like, and even though these don't quite apply to the model, but I was like, inherently, we need to be like on the right side of the securities. And so, but there was like, but at the same time, you talk to your lawyers like, okay, so best case scenario, say this happened, like, it was like, what can we do? And then they provide you an answer that's so like, well, just so I kind of wait it out. And I'm like, that's not, I can't do that.
Yeah. I wait, so, I die.
Right. No, and so then you're like, then I remember flying into Washington and I'm meeting with like people on the Senate Banking Committee and like congressmen. And I'm like, why in the hell am I here? Like, and you're like kind of like, I had this like flashback when I was in the U.S. Congress building, like with, where all the senators work and stuff. And you're just, and I was like, this is so strange. Like, I was like, if you asked me a year ago if I would be here right now and like you know, talking to these like government people about like bills and then understanding then how Washington works, where like everything takes forever. And then you're like, okay, I need to figure out something out, because if I wait here for these people, like, I was like, my business is also going to like, so it's like finding that middle ground of like being compliant and also creating value. And, you know, and it's worked out for us. Like, I'm super excited about where we're at today, but it's been like every month has been like a different theme and a whirlwind, you know?
Awesome. This is like super, super fascinating. I wasn't even sure where we were going to go. We started with Eastern philosophy and how to eat and healthier. And then we just invented a new way to run a media company. And then we finished up by figuring out how to rewrite the legal books and crypto. So good show. It's totally works for me. Yeah. Dan, this has been a lot of fun. Where do people go to learn more about Current Media?
So you can download us on the App Store. It's called Current. And you know, Current Music, search that. And then we're on iOS and Android, and you can listen to 100,000 stations, free Sweet. Offline music, and you know, get paid for your time and attention.
My wife scrolls enough that we should be able to be little millionaires through you.
Sounds good. Yeah, do it.
Jen, did you hear that? Do that. All right, sweet. Thank you for coming in. Appreciate it very much. To learn more about the upcoming Technori events, investment opportunities, check out the blog, subscribe to the newsletter at technori.com. Download the podcast on Spotify or Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on social at Technori, or you can follow me at Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap. Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Katoon. Joining me on today's show, this is a good one. Dan DeVais is the CEO of Current. It's an app you can download. It's a completely like a revolutionizing the way that people consume media. We talk about on the show how if you aren't paying for the content you're consuming, you are the product, essentially. This is like a little flip on the script where like you actually can fill out some questionnaires. You can do a whole bunch of different stuff. Ultimately, getting paid while you're consuming free music in this case. He also is well known in the regard that he raised what equates to a registered token offering to the tune of $36 million and had to kind of learn how the government works, really. And the government had to learn how crypto works. And so it was sort of a mutual learning experience. Regardless, it was a very good conversation. I learned a ton about how this whole process works. So you will definitely enjoy that for sure. Before we go to the interview, though, we've got to do our startup inbox, which is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. See why 65,000 businesses use ActiveCampaign for their marketing by signing up at ActiveCampaign.com/Technori. Get your first 2 months for free. Here is the question. And it is by Jim Betancourt, how to plan a company for an industry that doesn't exist. This is a good one, particularly if you're talking about crypto, because it didn't exist for a long time. And even if you want to talk about companies like Narrative Science, which was recently on the show, Stuart building a product that ultimately, you know, he built a company which worked fine, but he had a product, Quill, which is recently out, that is sort of a new application to data. And I don't think most people, when they started it 9 years ago or whatever, even had a clue of how this world would view data and how it would be used and extracted, etc. The key here ultimately is you've got to have a vision. You've got to know where you believe an industry is going And more and most importantly, you've got to understand how you believe users or people will use it and ultimately gain value from using it. Without those components, you are just playing blind. It's just a guessing game, in which case you might as well try something a little simpler. What I will say is, in order to get this done, unless you have very, very, very wealthy benefactors, you are going to need to figure out a way to have revenue, a path to revenue that at least supports you. So in the case of Narrative Science and others, they've created, you know, products and services that, you know, maybe are not the core future visionary product, but they are, you know, supplemental, and they drive enough revenue to, when combined with capital raise, to pursue and grow and build out that big vision. So I think what you need to do is understand where you think that this is going, whatever it might be. Believe in it full-heartedly and have constitution to ride it out, and then ride it out and figure out how to make money along the way to at least stay afloat. And if you do that, I think you will find success. Now, here's my interview with Dan, the CEO of Current. And I mean, hang on for this one, because we go all over the place, and it was a very fun podcast, and I think I'm going to start a brand new diet as a result of it. Don't quote me on that. All right, here's my conversation with Dan.